Blog Talk Radio.
Management, 923, I'll give you a corrected address, but you have a fire in a one-story ordinary, looks like it's about 40 by 120, 125. We're getting to traffic control, squad 5. Angle to 273-273. Angle to 1918 Battalion, with the 273-273.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Mark Lamplew, and you're listening to another episode of Firefighter Wellness Radio here on Fire Engineering Blog Talk Network. I want to thank everybody for listening to the show tonight and former. I want to thank our sponsor, Honeywell DuPont FDIC Scholarship Program. You know, you have the opportunity to recommend someone to receive a scholarship to FDIC International 2018. All you got to do to do that is go to www.HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com. All the information on how to nominate somebody is on there. You know, you can nominate a chief, anybody that you think is deserving to, you know, receive a free trip to FDIC, and, you know, they'll cover all travel and lodging expenses with that. So, once again, go to that website, HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com, and look at all the information. We have a pretty good show tonight. I have a pretty special guest, somebody that I've got to know pretty well over the last several years in doing the work that I do. His name is Captain Andy Starnes, and he's a captain at Charlotte Fire Department, but he also runs Kill the Flashover and another website called Bringing Back Brotherhood. So Andy is on the line here. I want to give him a second to introduce himself. So, Andy, how are you?
Doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, why don't you just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background and kind of some of the stuff that you've been up to lately.
Okay, thank you. I've been in the fire service now, career-wise, almost 20 years, and I've been in the volunteers for a long time. I always say that I've been in it since old enough that I could ride in the car with my dad to the volunteer firehouse, because that's what I got into it for, was chasing him around, and that's how I got into fire behavior research with Project Kill Flashover that my father, Joe Starnes, and Chief Oak both started. They're the founders. I'm just one of the many people that help with it. So I've been helping with that now for several years. And through my process and journey with the fire service, I found out that a few years ago, what we all find out is we hit some low points. And through that low point, through the good Lord, my wife, and a lot of other people, I found out that that was not an obstacle. It was an opportunity. And I figured out there was a lot of us who were having the same problem. And through that, Bringing Back Brotherhood, which is a nonprofit ministry where basically all we do is highlight good people like yourself and what they're doing. And we help find the resources for firefighters who are in need and connect them to them, whether it's just someone to listen to, whether it's a clinician, whether it's an aide in their state, or whether it's, you know, professional treatment, we try to guide them. And most of all, we try to be there for them. Started writing basically firefighter parables, stories, devotionals to encourage firefighters who are, and first responders in general, who are going through the same things that I went through. That's what I wrote out of it. Every time you read something of mine, I'm preaching to myself. So that's where that started, and met you, and been blessed to connect people to you and see the positive outcomes of that. I've had the misfortune of having some friends commit suicide and some other things happen. And out of that, I've realized that we're the first line of defense, and we're kind of hypocritical, because we'll go down the street and die for somebody we may not even know, but yet we wouldn't pee on the guy from A-Shift if he was on fire. So that's a problem. You know, we're sitting at the kitchen table with people that we're supposed to lay our lives on the line for, and a lot of times we don't even like them. So we need to put our differences aside and take care of one another, because we lost 122 of us to suicide last year that we know of. That's more than line of duty deaths. So that's where my passion is. I teach all over the country. I've been to 30 states, 3 countries. And as I do that, one of the things I've found is as I'm teaching, those are opportunities to help firefighters while I'm there. So that's how that kind of got started.
Yeah, great. The yeah, you're right. You and I, you have blessed me as being one of those people that, you know, most of the time I'm taking the calls and things like that for people to point them in the right direction, get them help and stuff like that. But, you know, as we all know, not everybody is immune to the stresses of life, regardless of what you do and how many clinicians you know or whatnot. And everybody needs some of those people to talk to. And you have actually been one of those people to me, and not necessarily in the sense of, not even about giving advice or anything like that. It's just being there to listen, you know. And a lot of that, I think, is key for people that are around somebody else that is maybe struggling or going through issues in their life. It's not necessarily you have to have the right answers for them. You know, just be a friend and listen, you know. And if they need help or further care, you get into that care.
You bring up a good point, and a lot of people don't help other people because they feel like they're not qualified or they don't know what to say. But what's really necessary is just a compassionate and attentive ear. As Stephen Covey says, mm-hmm. listen with the intent to understand, not to reply. So when you call or if I call someone, it's priceless that somebody would actually listen instead of going, well, when they stop talking, I'm going to say something. No, we're listening to try to understand, right? So, and that's a good point, what you said, because we all need somebody who just listens to us. This serves as kind of a pressure relief valve, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, yeah, exactly. Another thing, you know, as far as, like, I'm out right here in California right now, so I run some programs that help first responders, you know, with addiction-related issues, and I'm relaunching a program out here in Sacramento on October 9th. So I'm just out here getting prepared for that relaunch and stuff. You know, what I think we tend to forget is there's also that faith-based avenue. A lot more of what I deal with are clinicians and trauma therapists and, you know, that kind of structured therapy. But there also is another avenue that people can take. It's not meant to replace that type of therapy and sometimes, you know, as needed medications and whatnot, but it's often forgot about. And what a lot of departments have across the United States, mostly all of them have them or have access to, are the chaplains who are always available to talk. And that's what interests me so much about what you do, is you bring in the, you know, a lot of the faith-based aspect to that for the individuals that, you know. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? How did you get started in the Bringing Back Brotherhood and, you know, bringing that to people and writing about that sort of thing?
Well, it's an interesting way that it started, because it didn't come out of me wanting to do that. It came out of me almost quitting the fire department. I got to a really negative and dark place. And my wife came to me one day and told me, she said, you always told me this is the greatest job in the world. You said you'd never bring it home. Well, I'm telling you, you're bringing it home, and you're taking it out on me, and you're taking it out on our daughter. And she don't deserve that. And she pointed at all these journals. I've been writing in journals for years, you know, my private thoughts and frustrations. And she said, you always say firefighters are hurting, and you're writing about it in there, and nobody's reading them. What are you doing about it? And she turned around and walked out of the room. And by the grace of God, she put up with me. From that point forward, that's where that blog was born, and that's where a lot of cups of coffee were drank, where I, instead of walking out of a room where I thought I recognized something with a firefighter, I started just sitting down and listening. And that's when I realized the fire service was not a spiritual detriment, because that's what I viewed it as. I couldn't go to work and practice my faith. It was a spiritual opportunity. Because the way the world we live in now, you mentioned your faith or anything like that, you know, the first thing they do is either tell you you can't do that, or there's arguments about what you can and can't say, or and all these different things. And my model's simple. It's St. Francis's model. In all things, go and preach the gospel, and if necessary, use words. So if people don't know who you are by your actions, your words don't matter. So if you're not a good, credible firefighter first, if you don't care about people, and show that in everything you do and be consistent in it, they're not going to take time to listen to you or open up to you. So if you do all that first, as in the navigators, that was one of the first things they told those Christian guys who were in the Navy. The first year they were on the submarine, they were not allowed to tell anybody they were a Christian whatsoever. They had to prove to their colleagues, their fellow Navymen, that they were a true Navyman. And after that, they began to witness. But for me, you know, my faith was where I began, because I figured out real quick I had fallen off the wagon, so to speak. And I was telling everybody I was a good person, and I'd go to work and I was a hypocrite. You know, I was bad language and doing all these other things. And that's leading people astray. And that began a journey to, you know, the good Lord gradually starting to straighten me out. And by the way, that's a lifetime process. That doesn't happen overnight. And having a married up, having a wife who's a saint and puts up with me, and a daughter who teaches me more than I teach her, and being in a good church and having a strong accountability group has really showed me that, you know, life's about relationships, and you spend, what, 90,000 hours in your lifetime working? Well, who are you helping during that time? Are you just making a dollar, or are you making a difference? Our motto is that we save lives and property. What about the guy or girl next to you at the table? You know, if you really know what's going on, and you know this better than I do, we're dying more than in suicide than we are in the fire. Our marriages are, what, 75% divorce rate. We have some of the highest PTSD, anxiety and depression, alcohol and substance abuse there is on, you know, in any other occupation besides police and EMS. And we act like there's no problem. And, you know, it's just like, oh, well, that's just the way they are. No, that's not just the way they are. We need to be training our first responders and firefighters how to recognize that and help them, because, as you know, they are the first line of defense. Don't wait till they have to get to the clinician level, because they're going to talk to their brother or sister on the fire truck long before they'll talk to a clinician or somebody who's a trained counselor like yourself. So if they're better prepared, then they can make a difference. And that's my goal. My goal is to take the faith-based side of this and show people that there are caring, compassionate people out there who will pray for them, who will be there for them, and talk to them, and just walk with them. And as my mentor, Dr. Brooks said, you'll hold their pain. You don't own it. And you help them get to a place where someone like yourself can get them a little further down the road, because it's a comprehensive model. You know, it's not all just in our faith. You know, sometimes people need medicine. Sometimes people need counseling. Not everybody's the same.
Right.
But for me, my faith is my foundation. That's the reason I want to help people. That's the reason I wanted to be a firefighter. You know, it was, you know, he laid down his life for me. What am I doing for other people? So that's where that comes in for me. And realizing that there are more unchurched firefighters than there are anything else. And people like Fellowship of Christian Firefighters, who are doing a great job, and Firefighters for Christ, they are putting stuff out there. But most first responders or firefighters don't even know about it. I mean, how many people knew about you until a few years ago, and then you started the Share the Load program? That's an awesome program. So my job was to say, let's tell people about what not what I'm doing, but what's Mark doing? What's, you know, firefighter wife and 24/7 commitment, what are they doing? They're doing great stuff. Put a spotlight on it and promote the you-know-what out of them, and get out of their way and tell firefighters, hey, here's somebody to help you. It's not about me. I'm just trying to get them to somebody who can help them. So that's my passion. That's the reason I do it. And every one of us go and see these people, and we just, 9 times out of 10, we're either too busy or we're not courageous enough. Yes, I said it. To be vulnerable and open up and talk to our fellow firefighters. We'll run into a burned building, but we won't talk about our problems. And that's messed up. Because
that's the beauty, I think. There's a lot of negativity. You see, obviously, all the stuff going on today with all the negativity you see on social media and Facebook, and everybody's kind of back and forth at each other with and I think the politics of the time has been the worst I've ever seen it. Not even to get involved or even talking about that. But some of the benefits and the good that has come out of social media and stuff like that, is being able to reach more people with the resources to help them.
Absolutely.
So that's some of the, you know, the positives that I've seen in, like, stuff with you. You have a spot. What's the spot on your website with a bunch of resources? Why don't you talk a little bit about that on your bringingbackbrotherhood.com?
Well, my web admin guy is a good friend of mine, Eric Strauss. He runs Chicago Firewire and several other ones. He's guided me through the web process, because I am not a, you know, everything I've learned from other people, don't get me wrong. But he came to me one day, and, you know, I'd been putting devotionals on bringingbackbrotherhood.org for a while, and he's like, I think we should put a Mayday page or a Mayday button. I was like, I like that. And he's like, well, let's put some, you know, resources that are tailored just for firefighters and first responders, because one of the things we've been doing was trying to basically tell people, here's somebody you can talk to that will, you can relate to. You know, a lot of times guys and gals won't go to EAP because the clinician can't relate to what they're going through. I had one couple that left, and, you know, they left frustrated because they said, she just told us to spend more time together. Does she not realize you work two jobs and I work two jobs? We know we need to spend more time together.
Yeah, we know that, right?
Yeah. So the Mayday page is people who understand that. And I'm expanding this as we speak, when I find vetted resources that I know that are trustworthy, like yourself, that firefighters can look on here and they can have a multiple choice list of, I like this one, or no, that doesn't work for me, or I just want somebody to talk to. It's all listed there. And, you know, from, you know, anxiety to suicide prevention to Everyone Goes Home to your work to Share the Load program to Dan and Lori's work, the 24/7 commitment, they're all on there. And then we have, you know, articles and things like that. But there's stuff out there. It's just, I think my goal or my calling is just to point them to good people like yourself and others who are doing that good work that is often not known about, or either the pride gets in the way, they don't want to ask for help. And when they finally get to that point, they're like, okay, what do I do? It's almost too late. Who do I go to? That's usually when I get the Facebook message or the Twitter message at 3 a.m. and you try to connect them best you can. But a lot of times they don't even know what's available to them in their own department or their own area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been something, a learning curve for me, that got me into CISM and peer support and some other things that's helped me. But yeah, the Mayday page is a great resource. We're trying to add more to it. So if you know of resources, you see that if you look on there and you don't see one that you know of, just send me an email. We'll check it out. We'll put it on there. And that's how
you,
that's what we want to do, is just share good work.
When you're sharing your devotion, you do a devotional every day. How often are you doing that?
I've been writing devotionals daily for years. I think currently there's 400 and something on the website. I have more than that non-published, but I have a list of individuals that signed up for devotionals that I send out periodically. We have the daily roll call. You can go in there and just read what's coming up daily. There's responder resources. There's some people who've been very, very good to us, who've shared their testimonies, which I think is one of the most powerful things, not the clinician side, not the anything I'm doing. It's a fellow firefighter or first responder who has went through something, and they write about it. And they say, this is what I went through, some really bad stuff, and this is how I came out of it. Because a lot of people won't get help or think there's no hope until they read about or hear about, well, that guy or that lady went through the same thing I went through, and now they're fine. And I thought there was no hope. You know, so that gives
I agree with you. Even when we'll have, you know, when firefighters or other first responders go through the frontline program, sometimes they'll they'll write something about their experience, you know, of what was going on in their lives and what they did about it, and, you know, how much their lives have improved or changed. And whenever we have the opportunity to share those, they always do pretty well, and people like to read them because, you see that other people have been there. And a lot of times when you're reading them, you're sitting to yourself like, oh, my God, that's me. You know, I'm reading about myself here. And look, he did this and he got help, and so maybe there's some hope for myself. And that also helps the individual that had the problem A lot of times when you're putting that down on paper and you're releasing all that stuff, it's kind of like, you know, it's like that opening that valve, as you said, with the sharing, you know, to kind of get all that stuff out in the open and it's gone.
I've told many people what you just said. Even if nobody ever reads it, I said, if you'll get a journal and you can lock it up and keep it away from people if you want, and you'll sit down and write down your daily frustrations, your daily prayers, your daily, just whatever you're going through. If you're not into faith as I am, you write down an inspirational quote. But for me, I will write a particular scripture and what I'm going through at the top, and then write my thoughts about that. And when you share that with people later, when you feel ready, you'd be amazed at how your pain has made you, you know, divinely qualified to help somebody else. Because I can't sit next to somebody, Mark, and say, I know how you feel if I haven't been through what they've been through. You know, if they've lost a child and I haven't lost a child, I can't put my arm around them and say, I know how you feel. That's BS. But if I've been through the same pain and loss they have, they'll listen to me. You know, when you see a line of duty deaths occur and you see somebody from another department that has suffered a line of duty death, and they send their own people in and they minister to those firefighters, you know who they listen to first? Them. Not me, not the clinician, not the chiefs, not the chaplains, but the ones who recently lost someone and have took the time and been courageous enough, like Asheville Fire Department sends their guys out, sends Betancourt out almost every time, and he sits and shares with them. It does wonders for them because he can look them in the eye and say he knows how they feel, and he does. That is something that, as someone else said, you're part of a unique club you never wanted to be a member of, but my God, you can help people now because nobody else has what you have. You have a level of compassion, which compassion means to suffer with, and you survived, and now you can help someone else. And that's what we need. We need more heroes like that. You know, we need more people who went through great and terrible circumstances, and their faith has remained unshaken, and they've come out the other side of it. Not that they didn't pay a great cost for it, but they've come out the other side of it, and now they can go help people. And they don't have to be a counselor, as you know. They have to be willing.
And, you know, some of those, if there's, you know, especially with people out there right now that are, in hindsight, looking back, even in my my progression and things in my life that have happened, now looking back, I needed those things to happen to be where I'm at today. And if those things didn't happen, you know, it's. I often think about this a lot because of, you know, with my fiance and my career now and the things that I do, if one thing was different, if I had never went and got help for that one thing and did this, and my whole life would be different. You know, yeah. So everything that I went through had to happen for me to be where I'm at today. So it's not a negative. It's a positive. Mm-hmm. So even if you are struggling right now with something and you feel like, you know, there's no end in sight where this could get any better, if you go get help and you start reflecting on the stuff that's going on with you and you start applying what happened to you to others or whatever you choose, you're not going to look at it as troubling as it is right now.
Yeah, I agree. One of the most difficult pieces of scripture for me is Romans 8:28, where he says that we know that God can basically use all things for the good of those who love him. And you think, well, how can he use what I'm going through for my good? And you just said it. If this hadn't happened, I would not be where I'm at. I did 5 years of ministering in maximum security prison. And the ones that got it would tell you that they would not take back what happened to them to be where they're at. Not that they wouldn't take away the pain and the bad things they did, but they wouldn't take away the thing that changed them and said, I'm wrong. And I need to change. I need this to change in my life. You know, my wife and I both came from broken relationships prior before we got married. And we both say that if we hadn't went through the bad, we wouldn't have appreciated each other so much as we do now. And it's made us stronger because we both realized that she's priceless to me because nobody else is going to put up with me like she is, right? So I appreciate that because I know what the other side of it is. You know, you can't, as my father says, you can't have a wider perspective until you have a lesser one. Well, I've had a lesser one, and now I have this, and I want to hold on to it. And I think what you just said is so priceless that you went through all that, and it was terrible and it was hard. But look at where you are now. You wouldn't have got here if that hadn't happened. And experience is one of those things we don't want, but we get it, and those bad things happen, and all of a sudden we look back and we're like, if that hadn't happened, I wouldn't have been here. I wouldn't have met this person. I wouldn't be in this job. And, you know, we don't want to go through pain and trial and suffering, but for most of us, as hard-headed as I am, I know it's necessary for me because I didn't learn any other way. I don't know about you. I didn't listen to wise people when I was a teenager, you know.
I had to learn the hard way with everything.
Yeah. Tell me somebody who didn't, you know. But I agree with you. That's where it's at. But it's difficult when people – you can't tell people that when they're going through it, though. You know what I mean?
Now, I think the hardest part for, you know, especially with some of the stuff that I do is the ones that they reach out to you. You have the solution or the answers for them. They have the opportunity and the availability to take advantage of what's being offered to them, and they still have excuses of why they can't do it. And all I think about is all the other people that have reached out to me that want that opportunity and can't, such as going into an inpatient program because they don't have the money or whatever, they have to go somewhere else because they don't have the right insurance or whatever. And then you have an individual that has everything available to them, and they don't want to take your advice. It drives me nuts.
Plus the unwilling, you know, matter what you put in front of them, they won't take the help. You know,
eventually they will. They just haven't lost enough yet, you know, unfortunately.
Well, a friend of mine who stayed with us for 8 years. We tried helping him get sober before we realized what we were doing wrong, but we helped him along the way. And he used to tell me, he said, everybody's got their own ultimate low. He said, for some people, they get a DUI and they're like, okay, I got to change. He said, for other people, they got to end up in prison and lose everything before they say, now I need to change. I always said that I admired the faith that some of the inmates had, but I didn't want to go through what they went through to get it. And that's the thing that I get out of people like you or my neighbor who's two doors up, who's 92 and is a World War II vet. He has great wisdom. But guess what? He went through great tribulation to get it. He didn't get it from the textbook. Not that he's not an educated man, not that you're not an educated man. But your education has been by your understanding of the things you went through, which makes you a better person because you can help people. Not only because you have the knowledge, but you have that deep understanding and compassion to say, I've been where you've been. You know, not too many people can say that, Mark. And you have a testimony just like I do. And that's what makes you, I think, different and more valuable than most, because I can sit here in a white coat and tell them, take pill A and do 12 steps here and you'll be fine. Well, that's a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. It's going to bleed through. You know, it's like putting a 4x4 gauze on an arterial bleed. It's not going to stop it. You know, we need something more deeper and lasting that's going to get in there and help. But you and I have talked about this before. Not too many people are going to be healed and transformed in 6 sessions in their EAP, are they?
No.
They need
months,
more.
Years.
Well, and part of that, I think, is that person who's doing what you're doing or I'm doing or other people, where they're just checking on it. You know, it's the personal relationship of follow-up. That's why I think firefighters need to be trained, you know, because who's gonna call you and who are you going to listen to? Some guy from North Carolina you never met, like me, or the guy or gal that works with you on your ship that you trust?
Right.
You're going to talk to them. So that's where I think we should be and we need more people like you who are courageous enough to share their story, as you said, because that's what matters. That's what gets people to say, well, maybe I can make it. You know,
Yeah.
To me, that's perfect.
So you got the, you're bringing back Brotherhood Ministries. That just became a nonprofit? Because you, I remember you said you were trying to get, so what are some of the things that you are trying to do with that, you know, now that
basically all we're doing right now is highlighting what other people do. But if someone brings me in and I speak, anything that any monies or proceeds I receive go to one or four or five charities. I donate them to Fellowship of Christian Firefighters, or I buy like a ton of books and resources from Lori's site, and I just give the stuff away. My goal is to create a benevolent fund that for fire departments that don't have the ample resources to send people to counseling to say, well, you know, I need to get help. I need to do this, but I went through a divorce and my paycheck's zero every week. How can you tell me to go see a counselor when it's $100 an hour? And even after my copay, I can't afford it. Well, that's what I wanted. That's my goal, was to create that. As you know, that takes a lot of finances and a lot of willing people to do that. But my goal is to do that and connect people and create basically a database that shows wherever you are in the continental United States, you can click on it and say, here's somebody that I can talk to. Here's somebody I can get counseling from. Here's where I can get professional treatment. You know, just like whether what you do or what IFF's just opened or Safe Call Now or any of the other places we know are there. But somebody that actually has dealt with them and says, yes, they are somebody you can talk to. That's what I want to do, is have a personal interface and be an advocate for them. Because a lot of people won't tell them the truth, and I will. I'll tell them they will listen to you. They are good. Your insurance will work with them. Or I can connect you with somebody who can tell you if your insurance will work. You know, because a lot of them.
And there's different availabilities for, you know, pretty much anybody. I mean, obviously the individuals who have lost their jobs and lost their health insurances and stuff like that, it's a little bit more difficult. You may not get the specialized care. Sometimes you will with scholarships and things like that. But there's programs that are available to you, but you're never going to know unless you reach out for help. You know, so that's always going to be step one. You call it and AA, they have a saying about the 500-pound telephone, you know. And that goes into what I think we were talking about when John Dixon was on the phone, is getting in the habit of checking in with somebody. You know, in 12-step programs, they have what's called sponsors. And, you know, usually sponsors want you to call them every day. And the reason why they do that is not because they really want to talk to you every day. They just want to get you in a habit of reaching out to them and checking in. That way there, when a time comes when you are really struggling and you may pick up a drink or a drug or something, you'll pick up the phone instead. But if you don't practice or get in the habit of doing that, it's going to be that much harder for you when the time comes, and you're not probably going to do it. And that goes with anything. It's practice.
Mm-hmm. And John and I are super close, and he's my best friend, and we've been through a lot together. And one of the things that we both practice is accountability groups, whether it's a one-on-one, you know, somebody you call. I always say you got five fingers on one hand. You should have five people that you could call if your pressure relief valve's about to pop and you're about to lose your job because you're gonna say something stupid on social media or do something stupid, or like you said, pick up a drink or do some unhealthy coping mechanism that's not good for your life. John and I both practice that. We call someone, text someone, or we have an accountability group. I start little peer support groups in a private app called Slack, and basically allows them, you know, it's not on Facebook, it's not on Twitter, it's 5 to 10 people that, their only rule is absolute confidentiality. Unless you threaten to hurt yourself, you go on there and you can share your frustrations. And it doesn't get posted on the news. And it's a healthy way for them to share stuff that's going on in their department. And John and I have been doing that for years. It's a good thing. It helps you, as you said, sometimes you just need to get stuff off your chest. I always said that my hour ride home from work was my debrief, you know, because I would call somebody like John. Or I'd call my buddy Sean, or I'd call Mike or any other people that are in my group, and I just say, "How you doing?" And never fails. When they got through talking about how they're doing, I'd usually spill my guts,
Yeah.
It was good for you. And I never have had that where they betrayed that trust. And to me, that's priceless. If you have four or five people that'll do that for you, you better thank them, because the higher you go up in your profession, the smaller that circle gets. You can't talk to a lot of people because your confidence is, I mean, as you know, the higher you go up or the more secrets people tell you or in your position, a lot of people tell you things you can't repeat. Well, who do you talk to then? Who's going to keep your confidentiality? You know, we all got to have that. I'm thankful I have several. And my friend and mentor, Chief Lamb, taught me the concept of a board of directors. You know, I have a board of directors. I have an encourager. I have an accountability person. I have someone who will shoot me straight no matter how sideways I get. They're going to tell me the truth. I got somebody that will pray over me. I got somebody that will, if I call right now, they'll be at my house in an hour. That's your board. You better have one, because in life, you know, in peer support, they teach you, you better have low-hanging fruit. That means if I'm hungry, I want to be able to reach up and grab that fruit right off that tree right then and there. I don't need to go down the street. I don't need to call out of state. I need to be able to reach out and grab it. And that low-hanging fruit is those people that can help you. But that don't happen overnight. Like you said, I've got to have that discipline calling them. We call them health and welfare checks. I get that from my father. I'll call somebody about every third day. Health and welfare check. How you doing? You know, nothing fancy. Just seeing that they're alive and well. And that's what matters. It's not that complicated, I don't think.
No, now when, because I've known you for the last couple of years, and I think we really have got to know each other, because lots of people do reach out to you, because I know that you've had several people, you know, contact me just because they reached out to you. Like, what do you, usually, how are they finding you? Are they finding you through your website, like a contact form? Are they calling you up? And what are a lot of the things that you're seeing from, like, what are some of the major problems that you're seeing from other firefighters that you help?
Well, first of all, people don't go to websites as much as they used to anymore. I found that out the hard way. Everybody has to have a website, but people don't go to it that much. Like less than 70% of people, if they see a link on your tweet or your Facebook post, they're not even going to click on it. You know, they just want to read what's there and scroll on. So I do have a website, and blessed to have somebody that takes care of that for me. But I have Facebook, Twitter, and Facebook pages that, to me, those have been more valuable, because when we post those devotionals, sometimes that stirs that thought or what they're going through, and they'll reach out through that. Or people I've met through teaching will say, hey, this person is struggling. Will you reach out to them, or they're going to reach out to you? And I don't have the answers. Just like you said, I just listen and talk to them and kind of go through what they're going through and find out, hey, well, maybe we need to walk this way, walk towards this person, or maybe you need to talk to Mark, or maybe you need to go over here and talk to this organization. And but you got part of that, though, Mark, is making yourself vulnerable and available. And those two things are not convenient, as you know. When do you get the phone call? When you're in the middle of something, right?
Yeah,
or when you're
2 o'clock
doing
in the morning.
Sure, you know, you get the suicide threat at 2 a.m. You know, you can't ignore that. You don't know. But as far as the common problems, it's the same everywhere I go. It's marital, which could be from any number of things. You know, financial usually is a big one. Substance abuse and alcohol. Alcohol is a big one. We've got several people we're working with that are struggling. Things that people don't talk about, you know, pornography is a big one. I write about that one a lot because that was my own battle too. You know, Every Man's Battle is one of the best books I read about that one. Any of those struggles, firefighters have anxiety and depression, and as you know, PTSD is huge, because what do we not get, which is sleep. So that's one of the main contributors. and then we work all these extra hours and do all this stuff. So it ends up adding up. And I think people do a great job of dealing with critical incident stress, but I think what they fail to identify is the cumulative stress. You know, gradual 30-year career, saw this one thing, had this one thing happen, little thing here, little thing there. And they've done it all, seen it all. And then on year 28, they have one bad call, but they've also had a year of bad stuff happening. Their health is struggling. They're almost at the end of their career.
Marriage
and
issues.
All of a sudden they snap. Marriage issues, yes, all at once. You know, like you said, it comes in threes. And then it happens. And I think what we do is we miss those cues because that person's been gradually picking up those burdens for a lifetime and never letting them go. We don't teach self-care. We could do a better job of that. That's why I think it should start. Like recruit school, you know, senior firefighter, all the way up company officer level, all the way up chief to administrative. But everyone should be trained in firefighter size up, if you will, and recognizing those things and how to help one another. And they shouldn't fear, as you said, the EAPs and all that stuff's got a terrible stigma because some
and
people are scared of
and
their jobs.
Believe it or not, a lot of them are really good. There's a lot of good services in EAPs, but there's that fear of one going to them because they're involved with the department. You know. So, and you know what? I don't know. I couldn't tell. Like, if an individual calls me and says, I don't want to go to my EAP because I don't trust them, I don't know if they can or not, you know, because I don't know. You know, I like to think they would be able to, but, you know, you never know, I guess, you know. But one of the things that I think I appreciate, you know, with you, because you do it, you do refer out people that you know that you, it's not something you can help. And but some faith-based, I don't want to say organizations, but people believe that if somebody has an addiction issue or substance abuse issue, that church is the answer and they shouldn't get therapy. And that's a dangerous kind of a line to take. And so that's why I think it's important that people realize that you know, the faith aspect is important, and it can very well help you. But, you know, when you're dealing with a PTSD or an addiction, you know, there are medical issues. You also need medical and clinical care, you know.
Absolutely. It's almost, you know, you know, we teach the fire triangle, you know, fuel, heat, and oxygen. Well, when we look at, you know, self-care or this comprehensive behavioral health, it's not just one-sided of it. You know, you do need you there, Mike?
Yeah, I'm here.
I thought I lost you. You do need all sides of this. You need, you know, the spiritual aspect. You need the behavioral health side. You need my friends Dan and Jim to talk about, you know, firefighter functional fitness. You need the fitness aspect of it, you know, like the YMCA model, body, mind, and spirit. It's not just one-sided, you know. I've struggled with anxiety for years. And could not beat it on my own. I had to go talk to a doctor about it, you know. And that's something
And another thing that I'll see a lot, you know, when I'll do an intake for a firefighter to admit him into the program for, you know, the frontline program, and they'll ask me how long is it, and we'll say, well, you know, the minimum is 30, could take up to 90. Well, I can't go 30 days. I can only come 2 weeks. Well, you wouldn't go into your cancer doctor and he tells you you got to do chemo for 4 months and say, well, no, I can't do chemo for 4 months. I can only do it for two. No, you're going to do it for the 4 months. And it's behavioral health and mental health is one of those things where people just, they don't understand that it's, you know, it's a medical condition just like cancer or anything else you can get. And you can't just put a time or a limit on how long it's going to take you to get better because it's your body. Everybody is different. You know, one person, they may get well in, you know, a month. Another one, it may take 6 months. You know, it's, and I think that a lot of that has to do with the education around it. It's just of the unknown.
Well, and part of it has to do with our pride. We want to dictate the terms of our rescue.
Yeah, that's
it's
true.
Like,
yep. Yeah, right.
It really is. I mean, it's like somebody hanging from a window. It's on fire, and we throw the ladder. We're the hero. We climb the top, and they go, "I really wanted Jim to rescue me because he has nicer hair than you. Will you go get Jim?" You know, you can't do that. You know, and that's what
yeah.
the pride aspect of our life is. Number one, we don't want to ask for help. Two, when we do ask for help, we want it to be anonymous. We don't want the department to know. We don't want everybody to know. And then we start dictating the terms. It's like that denial, anger, bargaining, all that. We start going through it and not realizing,
mm-hmm.
like you said, this is a process for a reason. It's necessary. You spend this many days here. And I think that's where if we had somebody who was brave enough to share their testimony, they say, "Why don't you talk to this person? I know you're not willing
yeah.
to go for 90 days or 30 days, but why don't you
talk to
this
person?
Because
I can't get off work." Well, it's,
yeah.
you know, it's... whether you can get off work or not, this is your health, this is your medical issue, and this is what it's going to take to get better. So what's more
yes.
important, your health or your work?
Well, and that's the side effect of it is I've had several tell me they can't do that because they can't get off work, and then 30 days later they're ready to give up their job anyway. And I'm like,
yeah,
well,
or
you
they
just
lose
told me you
it.
Couldn't get off work. Now you're losing your job or you're quitting because you can't work. So which one would you rather do? Lose your health, lose your family, or temporarily be out of your job and possibly come back to work? You know,
yeah,
that's,
or
that's
lose your job for now. Lose
yeah.
your job for now, get better, be, you know,
yeah.
be well, and then go get another job, you know, and
yeah.
you know, things will happen to you when you're well. I mean, may
and,
not be what
and
you
And identity
right
is
now.
A big, identity crisis is a big one, Mark. Most of us
oh, yeah,
will not
focus.
Admit
yeah, they'll be.
We cannot give this job up. We can't hang that helmet up. And when you tell me I can't do this anymore, there are many people that will end it because of that. Their
yeah.
entire identity is tied up in the words firefighter. It's not husband or wife or father. We got caught up in this, and it's a great calling. Don't get me wrong. But one day I got to take off the helmet, you know, and every other shift I come home, I got to take off the helmet. I'm not captain at this house. I'm head dishwasher.
That's right.
I'm dad. I'm husband. You know, ain't nobody giving orders in here from me. It's my wife's the head chief of the house, right? You know, and
yep.
and that's what happens, though. They get caught up in it, and they don't want to retire. They don't want to give it up, and next thing you know, their whole world is in the word firefighter. And
yeah.
the thing is the firefighter's a calling, you know, or it's your great choice of profession, but you can't put everything you are into it because one day you're going to hang it up. And when you do,
mm-hmm.
you better be ready because then you got to be the person you were called to be, whether you're a husband or wife or, you know, brother, sister, uncle, aunt, whatever. You know, firefighters.
And hopefully
thing.
Those people are still there because you didn't put all your life into your career.
You didn't run them off. You know, like they said, the great affair
yeah.
That you never saw coming, which is you spent your whole life cheating on your family with the fire service. And then you came
yeah.
home and they're gone. And, you know, that's when it hits home. Is you know, your helmet and all the wonderful things you've seen and all the things you've done. As Stuart Scott says, you can go around the world and save 1 million people for Jesus, but if your wife and children don't know who you are and who I am because of you, you've failed. Well, you go out and save everybody in the world as a firefighter, but if your family don't know who you are, you failed. You know, they're the
yeah.
ones you're supposed to save first. And that's what I'm passionate about is you got to be right at home first before you step out that door. Because you can't put on this fake persona that you are this person at work and then be a totally different person at home. Because those two things will war with each other. You'll find that pretty quickly, the split personality of I'm this person at work and this person at home. Eventually, one side's going to win out. And you'll have problems with that. You can't turn it off. You're going to be one or the other eventually. And that's the thing. We have to be at peace with who we are first and know that we all need help, as you know as well as I do. And I think that's what we need is more courageous people to say, yes, I've had a problem. Yes, I got help. And I overcame it through these circumstances, these people, these services, my faith, my family, and share it.
Yeah.
And then
yeah, and a lot of people don't realize, I mean, me personally, you know, in me coming out I don't know if I, and I'm not really going to share publicly about what has happened to me, and I still wouldn't change coming out and talking about it, but I have faced some tribulations for coming out and telling what happened to me, you know, has caused permanent detrimental damage in my life. I did it, and, you know, hopefully it helps other people, and that's what I'm going to continue to do. You know, and I moved on from that, but, you know, so I always tell people, even when they're writing their stories out, if you don't want to put your last name, you just want to use your first name, you know, please, you come out when you're ready, you know. I think it's important for people to, there's a, on Netflix, there's a show that talks about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's called The Anonymous People. And if you get an opportunity to watch this documentary, but it talks about, there's a big thing in AA about being anonymous and not talking about, you know, your story and your recovery outside of the rooms of the meeting. And they're now saying how detrimental that is for other people going through issues, is because if you don't talk about what you went through with other people, nobody's going to know that they can get better or that it's possible. You know,
Exactly, right.
What good is hiding? You know, you're never going to help anyone. So that's what that documentary talks about. And it's a phenomenal documentary if you get a chance to see it.
Well, the value of a testimony, Mark, is the Dead Sea analogy. The mighty Jordan River flows into the Dead Sea, and the sea is dead because nothing comes out of it. You go through all the things you've been through, and you fail to share it, or tell anybody about it, or, you know, spread the word of how someone helped you through it, then what did you go through it for? Tell me why. What was the point? You know, why did, you know, there are so many people who struggle with, why did this bad thing happen? And why did God let this happen? Or why did so-and-so disappoint me? Or this person betrayed me? Or my health failed? Okay, let's just say, for example, you went through all that, and you never tell a soul about it. You know what that's going to do? Poison you. You're the Dead Sea. Whereas I have more people who are my heroes that have went through cancer and divorce and all this other stuff, who take their time to go and sit beside somebody else that's going through the same thing and just be there with them. You know, to me, that's true courage, because they're actually opening up the vulnerable parts of their life, which nobody likes to do. And they're sharing with them, because you can get hurt, as well as you know, doing that. So you're taking off your armor. I mean, it's like a firefighter taking off their PPE in the fire. You don't want to do that. They're taking all this off, and they're saying, this is who I am. This is what I went through. There are very few people willing to do that. And we need more of them. We really do. We need a different level of compassion. The same level of compassion that you extend to the citizen, you should be able to do the same for your fellow compadre and brother and sister on the fire truck. And if you don't, we're going to keep seeing those numbers go up in suicides and line of duty deaths when it comes to things like behavioral health issues that led to something else. And we're failing to identify that, because you also know they're not tracking that well in the volunteer system either. That's a big issue.
Yeah, it's probably a lot higher than we're. Well, we're getting ready to be out of time here. What's some of the things you got going on in the next few months? You going to be anywhere?
Yes, sir. We're looking at August 23rd. I'm going to Ottawa, Canada, October 1st to the 5th, teaching with my buddy Sean Blocker, doing my thermal imaging program up there. I'm also going to do some ministry programs, hopefully in Florida, coming up. I'll post those as well. I'm going to be at Firehouse Expo Nashville, teaching the live fire program and going out and sharing some of the good stuff that you're doing and other people are doing at the expo, hopefully getting to meet with Dan and Lori and Fellowship Christian Firefighters and some other ones. We'll be in Indiana in November, and then next year we're going to be in Germany and several other places. So we've got a lot of opportunities coming up. I think we're booked until March of 2018 right now. So my number one challenge is staying married, stay employed, because, you know, that balance thing. You got to watch out. You can't be gone too much, you know. But very blessed, very thankful, just trying to pay it forward and share the good message and talk about good people like you that are helping people. That's my goal.
So tell the listeners how they can find you, your website, your email, if somebody wants to get a hold of you.
Now, Facebook is Bringing Back Brotherhood Community. You can also go to the website, bringingbackbrotherhood.org. You can go to Twitter, which is @backbrotherhood. You can reach me email, starnsandrew1@gmail.com. All my contact info is on all those places as well. I have many, many accountability partners who help keep me straight and help share this message as well. And when you talked about anonymous, there are many of them across the country doing what I'm doing, and they're not talking about it and tooting their own horn, so I'll toot it for them. There's good people like John Dixon and Chris Baker and Jim Moss and some other ones that are Chris Slayer and a bunch of others that are helping people. And I applaud them for what they're doing. So you look upon your mentors, realize that they're also a mentor for another reason. They're helping their own, and we should do the same.
Great. Well, Andy, thanks. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. And I'll put your information up on the Blog Talk page so they can find your website link there. I did put it up there, but I put .com, so I got to change that to .org. Okay. Thanks again. Keep doing what you're doing. Please, if you need anything, give me a call.
Always, brother. We'll talk soon. Thanks again for the opportunity.
All right.
Take care.
Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to another episode of Firefighter Wellness Radio. I also want to thank our sponsor, Honeywell DuPont FDIC Scholarship Program. If you know anybody that you want to nominate to win a free travel, lodging, expenses, included TFDIC International 2018, and I'm going to be selected to do a training at FDIC, so you could come out and they can win the opportunity to see that. Go to www.honeywelldupontfdicscholarship.com. You can also go to the Blog Talk Radio website and find the link to that sponsorship opportunity. And I want to thank all the listeners. You can find my information if you want to contact me. It's mark@361.org. That's my email. You'll find Captain Andy Starnes' information on there. I want to thank everybody for a great show. There's resources out there now. It's not like it was years ago where you didn't know where to go, you didn't know where to turn. The resources are there. You just got to, look for them. Google firefighter wellness, firefighter help, firefighter suicide. You'll find tons of website resources linked, the entrance web, life safety initiatives. They're there. So I want to thank everybody for listening. Until next time, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Fire Engineering Talk Radio.